Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hey, this is John Williams. We're about to start The Mincing Rascals, the weekly podcast we record in the studios of WGN. But before we get to that, I just want to thank our friends at Kelly Cruises for sponsoring The Mincing Rascals. Listen to this trip we're going to take. This is your official invitation to come with us. We're going to go to Paris. We'll be there for a couple of days. We'll stay in the lovely hotel by the Arc de Triomphe. We'll do tours and excursions and drink some red wine. And then, after a couple of days, and this is starting July 30th, 2019, next July, after a couple of days in Paris, we will then board the Ama Waterways Ama Lyra for a 7-night cruise along the scenic Seine. So come with us and stand on the historic Normandy beaches during the 75th anniversary of D-Day. We'll see Monet's home and gardens in Giverny, as I call it, Giverny, I believe somebody else said. It's in France. Josephine and Napoleon's Chateau. We'll stop in Rouen and other places that I'm probably not pronouncing well. It's going to be a magnificent trip. Paris, then a few days up the Seine to Normandy. Can you imagine being on the beaches on the 75th anniversary, and then we come back to Paris? It's all-inclusive, too. That means your excursions, your tours, there's bike tours, all the meals on board, beer and wine and soft drinks, all included. We have nightly entertainment and pre-dinner cocktail parties. These trips, these boats are so much fun. Call Kelly Cruises and Tours right now, 630-990-1111. 630-990-1111. Today is Thursday, June 21st. It's the first day of summer 2018. It is a miserable day in Chicago with record rainfall, and it's 4:10 in the afternoon. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 and on Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. till noon.
And I'm Kristen McCurry of the Tribune Editorial Board, sitting here with the microphone in my hand in the sort of still unpacking studios.
I'm Eric Zorn, the weak but probably strong columnist from the Tribune. Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays in the newspaper.
All right, we'll unpack that in a second. Steve Bertrand and the rest of our friends from the Missing Rascals can't join us today. And by the way, if you hear some microphone noise, if we sound a little different than we technically usually do, it's because we're using handheld microphones in a temporary studio we've set up in a beautiful space on the 18th floor of our new studio tower. We are overlooking the Chicago River, and we'd be able to see the lake and the Ferris wheel on Navy Pier were it not for all of the clouds, mist, and rain today.
And we're in the performance studio. You guys have a performance studio now.
We do. Cool. So eventually, this will be a space where somebody like a fiddle player, say, a journalist fiddle player could come
in. What about somebody who wants to sing a song with Eric?
All right, go ahead. Let's hear it. What have you got, girl?
Well, I'm trying to think of a summer song. I feel very clubby sitting here with a...
We're sitting in tall boy chairs with handheld microphones.
And the living is easy.
Why do you say you're whatever the hell you just said you are today? What was your...
Well, this is how Trump described the immigration problem, that you can either be weak and let the country be over-infested with immigrants, or you can be strong. And then he said he was probably strong. So in other ways, I'm weak but probably strong.
The president said this week that separating kids from their families who cross illegally into the country is a problem that was created by Democrats when they need to fix... Presumably, the fix would be to pass legislation remedying this, legislation that would include maybe funding for his wall. Democrats don't want to do that. But the big surprise this week was that the president sort of buckled, didn't he? How would you characterize what the president did, Kristen, in signing an executive order to at least keep the new families that come in together?
Well, he screwed up. I don't know if this was not thought through, this idea that you were going to be separating families, if they didn't care, but I mean, clearly he had to undo what he said he had no power over initially.
Right. He said that
he blamed Congress.
Well, you can't really house the kids with their parents in detention the way things were set up before. I mean, there is a problem that they have, which is if they do want to arrest people who are crossing the border, and there's a 1997 consent decree that's out there, or it's court ruling, but maybe it's because that you can't have minors locked up for more than like 20 days. And so if you're going to you can't just let the minors go, especially the really young ones. If you can't find relatives, can't find places to put them, then you need to reunite them with their parents. The Obama administration and previous administrations had just said, well, we're going to let you guys all go and on your own recognizance, basically, and come back to court.
And they do.
And they did.
And 97% of the people who were released on their own recognizance said you got to come back would show up again.
He had a problem, too, though, with a bunch of Central American immigrants crossing over in large numbers. And they were warehoused, but they were warehoused together, parents and kids. He had this problem, too, according to what quotes from his Homeland Security director said.
Yeah, and people were saying that why weren't liberals outraged by what Obama was doing? And they were. The immigration lawyers had raised a big fuss about the way Obama was handling the border.
I don't remember this.
Well,
remember calling Obama
the deporter-in-chief?
No, I do not. I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, he deported more nonviolent offenders than Bush.
Well, then why is it different this time?
Because of what you said. Because they normally did their best to keep families together, even if you were going to face deportation.
Now, is it a little funny to you then? Okay, fine. We fixed it. We'll put the kids in jail, too. I mean,
it is.
The solution is y'all go to jail, but at least you're in jail together. Hooray.
Right. Well, this is his zero tolerance approach to immigration, which he feels, and I think the insiders in his administration feel, is a winner with the electorate. And I'm not sure they're wrong about being tough on immigration. I'm not sure that it's a political miscalculation.
Why?
Certainly last week...
you think it would be a deterrent, Eric?
Certainly last week was a political miscalculation, huge political miscalculation. But the idea of getting tough on immigration, getting tougher on illegal immigration, seems to be a political winner. It just does. I mean, one of his aides was quoted as saying it's a 90-10 proposition with the electorate. I'm not sure it's quite that strong.
57% this week of Republicans polled said they agree with the president in separating the families. But that's 57% of Republicans. And I don't know that that's a political victory, is it?
It's not a huge number, actually, for when you're talking about the kind of support that he usually enjoys, which is around 90%.
Well, the optics were so terrible, and the volume was so terrible. Those crying kids that were held in detention, some of the pictures that were surfacing. It was interesting because one day I looked at both Fox News and MSNBC. You can imagine what I saw. At MSNBC, I saw those foil blankets on the floor. And then on Fox News, I saw what looked like dorm rooms nicer than anything we had in Carbondale, let me tell you.
It varies. I mean, they had some...
I think both were legitimate pictures.
Who were saying... Yeah, they were. And, I mean, places in Texas had... I think those were the places that had the aluminum foil blankets. But New York had, yes, like dormitory style. I mean, the point is, this is a vexing problem, like everything, like all these huge issues are in our country. And while this was a terrible policy, I'm surprised actually at the 57% of Republicans supporting separating them. Because
you think it would be higher or lower?
No, lower. No. Because I get tough on it. I think you can be tough on immigration. You can want to build a wall. You can want to support law enforcement at the border, because we've really created just an impossible situation for them, for border agents, and you can still be compassionate and realize that this is an unreasonable approach.
This is the theme of your column on, was it Tuesday?
Yes, I just recited it.
Yeah, okay. Even when you have this... this is what we do, right?
If I were you.
I want to say this about these polls. And
why don't you quote me? You quote me.
As Kristen said, 57% of Republicans, but those polls were all in the field. I wrote about them. They were all in the field last weekend. And that was really before. This story really kind of broke like Sunday night. It was, and all those images, the images of the little girl, the audio from ProPublica, the kids crying, all that stuff. And then the reaction from Laura Bush, from the Pope, all that stuff came in.
70 U.S. attorneys general.
83, yeah.
Was it 83? And the Methodist Church told Jeff Sessions that you're wrong about this.
Yeah, and all that stuff came after these polls were in the field. I'll bet that number dropped further. And then Mitch McConnell came out. And so there was a lot of stuff that happened just at the beginning of this week where I think this story really rose to the top. And I'm guessing that number for Republicans probably dropped below 50%.
Ultimately, I think this goes to the wall issue. Do you think the president was trying to leverage these kids to get the wall that he wanted? That is, he can endure the discomfort of this? Can Democrats? Maybe they can't. Maybe they'll say, okay, fine, screw it. We'll give you your damn wall. Just reunite those families. Was that the game the president was playing?
It was the game he played with DACA as well, the deferred action.
And then you must be surprised that he blinked rather than the Democrats in this case.
Yeah, in this case, he did blink. He's not going to get the wall funding right now, but
it was in two of the bills that they don't have enough support for right now,
right.
Some funding for the wall. But, I mean, in terms of leverage, you can say like he was leveraging kids, but he was trying to get them back to the table. They did walk away from a really good deal.
Democrats did.
Yes, they did. And I don't agree with the separating children policy for sure. But this is a problem that Congress has failed to address. And they had 2 years with a filibuster-proof Senate and a majority in the House, and they didn't do it. And Obama changed the rules by executive order that a lot of people thought was an illegal act, or he crossed over his constitutional authority to do so. So Trump is right that this is, Congress needs to fix this, and they've had so many chances. His using Sessions and quoting the Bible and all of that, the wrong way to go about it.
Yeah.
Well, the wall is an interesting issue because it was a centerpiece of his campaign, but he said Mexico was going to pay for it. Now he wants $25 billion to build a wall when we're not at a time where we really need this wall. I mean, the need for such a wall has not been demonstrated, and I don't see why resisting that kind of expenditure when you've got schools that are crumbling and bridges that are crumbling.
$25 billion is not a lot of money.
Billion.
I know that. Billion. $25 billion federal dollars is not that much money.
Most Americans are in favor of tighter border security. I mean, I'm quoting somebody who was interviewed from England talking about this whole mishap. We have to take off our shoes at airports. I mean, we have really strict rules about even Americans crossing international lines and moving through airports. We can't have people, even suffering people from Central America or Mexico or wherever, Guatemala, just flowing through the border. They have to be checked and paperwork has to be found and they have to be detained until we figure out what to do with them. We can't just have open borders. The country actually does not support that.
Yeah, and I don't think that Democrats don't support open borders. I think that's a misnomer, the idea that Democrats are behind that. And when you look at the polling on the wall, it's about 34% support for funding a wall like that. So it's an issue that, I mean, but I agree with Kristen. I think that we need to have, you know, we need to have a good, strong border security. That doesn't seem cruel or unreasonable to have borders in a country and to enforce them.
But so bad.
Everybody's doing it. I mean, like France and Italy are fighting right now because the Italians turned away a huge ship of migrants. There is a point where people realize we can't, you know, government can't do everything, and we have to figure out a better way of handling situations like this one.
Boy, it sure looked bad, though, doesn't it? The United States tearing these families apart.
Well, it looked terrible. I think we all are in agreement that it was, as a political calculation, it was just dreadful.
Steve Chapman in your paper called the U.S. policy a model of brutality. And, you know, you can always tell where somebody is by the verbs they use. If they use the word snatch, then you know they're snatching the children away from their parents. But if they say separate, then it's somebody who has a more modest view about what's happened here. It just looked so heartless. I mean, that's what broke Laura Bush's heart. That's what got all of the living and former first ladies to come out against this, was it just looked so hard on those kids. They are innocent bystanders. So all of this talk about the politics and the law and the immigration reform, forget all of that. It was just torturing America this week that they had to endure that and realize that it was their country that was doing it, the United States of America.
Yeah, and I'm wondering who gamed this out in the White House. Who said, well, this is going to...
How is this going to play?
Don't worry, there are not going to be any pictures of kids under Mylar blankets.
There'll be no audio of a crying kid being held in detention and Spanish crying out, Daddy, Mommy.
And the media is not going to press us for tours of these facilities.
Was it fair? Do you think that it got fair coverage, whatever that means, anymore?
No. I mean, I appreciate, and I wrote about, the emotional aspects of this, but these are parents who committed a crime, and when you commit a crime, you assume some risk that you might be separated from your family. Now, this is a nonviolent act. It does not, you cannot equate this, which I've seen elsewhere, like, well, if I rob a bank. No, they're committing a nonviolent act, trying to better their lives, so it's different to me. But yeah, I don't think the coverage, some of the coverage I saw were from people who study this routinely, who say that They know that the policy in the United States is if you come with a child, you are going to be detained and treated better and not thrown in jail, so that a lot of these, they couldn't even identify whether these were actual parents and children. Some of them were guardians. Some of them were, they think, knowingly gaming the system. So I don't think that part got enough coverage, if it's true. But
well, speaking of stuff that's not fair, so there's Melania Trump getting on the plane to, from Andrews Air Force Base, fly to Texas to take a look at what's going on over there. And she did that today, the day we're recording this podcast. And as she walked up the steps to get onto the plane, she had a fashionable olive green jacket with white letters on. And the letters were kind of in a graffiti style. And it was a jacket that was somewhat in vogue last year, I'm reading, and it was inexpensive, $39. But the graffiti on the back of the jacket had the words, "I don't really care, do you? I don't really care, do you?" was the jacket she wore getting onto the plane to fly to go check out these kids. When she got off the plane down there, the jacket was off. Her spokesperson said, "It's a jacket. It's not a statement. She doesn't mean anything by the words on it. She wasn't sending a message." but
that's just maybe she was saying F you to all the reporters who went after her last time about her high heels.
I know. Shame on me for describing her wardrobe. I'm just reading the paper.
She wore on the plane and then changed into sneakers when she got to the last, when they were touring hurricane
damage. I don't really care. I don't really.
So maybe she was saying, "I don't really care what you think about what I'm wearing," and stop talking about
maybe it. Maybe. It sounds like some bad planning by her office, because they know that whatever she wears is going to be scrutinized.
It has words on it. Her jacket said, "I don't care. Do
right.
you?"
And Kristen's explanation, is plausible, but they should have said that. They should have said she was telling reporters that to stop.
She's going to get beat up no matter what she does. So
I think she should have been moot about it then and not had any statement on her jacket. And then that conversation would not have distracted from her mission.
Maybe somebody threw it over her shoulders before she got on. I don't know. Who cares?
The largest age group in Chicago. Did you see this? What is the 10-year range of the largest age group in Cook County?
I just saw the headline.
55 to 64-year-olds.
All right, my people.
It is not. It is 25 to 34-year-olds. Millennials make up the largest age bracket in Cook County now. The definition of a millennial is someone who today is between 22 and 37, by the way, but 25 to 34-year-olds.
These are Ellis people.
The producers at this joint are running the county. We now have about 5 million residents in Cook County, and about 1 in 6 are millennials. The county's population is going down, and no state has seen more blacks leave it than Illinois has. There's a bunch of this data that's coming out. I only bring it up to you because I think it's just kind of interesting to remind ourselves of who's here and who we are. But does any of this jump out at you, except that the county population continues to shrink and Illinois continues to be a not great place to move to?
I didn't read the story, so I don't know the answer to this, but is the millennial population growing? Because that's the population. Elif's going to be paying Social Security for all of us. Thank you, Elif, for that. and that really, that when you have a strong young population and that population's growing, that bodes well for the future of the city. If that population may be larger, but every population segment is shrinking, that bodes poorly for the city. So I don't know.
I know the millennial population is the one that is shrinking the slowest.
Is that what it is?
Is the most vibrant of them. And they credit the technology sector and all of the things that we're trying to do to make it an attractive place for 25-year-olds to come and work.
There's no question Chicago is booming, and I'm sure that's the anchor of those numbers. But there's also no question Chicago is growing overall more slowly than any, lost more population overall than any big city. The state lost more population than any state, third year in a row, highest out-migration state. So, you know, yes, these numbers are promising, but a lot of these millennials are going to eventually transition into the suburbs, buy homes, realize their property taxes are too high, and move to Texas. So,
I'm so sorry about that, because I'm going to stay here as long as they let me. By the way, TV journalist Elizabeth Brackett died on Sunday at the age of 76. She wrote the book Pay to Play, How Rod Blagojevich Turned Political Corruption into a National Sideshow. She was riding her bike in Chicago. She was one of the best in the world triathletes at her age group. She was consistently winning national and international competitions. She was riding her bike and died. I'm not exactly sure what happened to cause her death on that bicycle. But she passed away at the age of 76. And I just wanted to mention that to you all. She was very generous to come on our show many times. We talked to her about 6 months ago, and we were debating whether or not Blago should get out early and as an authority on that topic. You've seen her so many times on Channel 11. We reached out to her. She was just always a good, fun interview, and she knew her stuff, you know.
She was an inspiration in two ways. One was the way she just refused to get older physically when she, you know, doing all these triathlons. I think she was world champion.
Yeah.
I mean, she was really fantastic. The other is that, you know, she didn't become a journalist until she was like 34,
Four.
I think. Mm. I mean, that she was a political operative and a policy spokesperson and so on. She just went over and kind of rammed her way into Channel 2, and they said, no, we don't really need you. And she showed up for work, even though they said don't. And it was great stories about her, where she just reinvented herself. And then she went from station to station and did a ton of great work.
Won a bunch of Emmys in Chicago.
And, you know, I mean, it's terrible. The loss is terrible. It was way too young, obviously. But the voice, she lived life to the fullest.
She did. And we played back her voice from the last interview, because when we were calling her to talk about Blago, she was busy training for some triathlon. We asked her which event is best for you, the running, the swimming, the biking, etc. And the takeaway for me was how vibrant her voice was. You could not believe that was a 75-year-old woman talking to you, not just about the subject matter, but just how, you know, youthful her voice. I don't know how else to describe it. Her voice was. She was really a force, you know?
I think how agonizing it must be for her family to not know what happened. You know, she was found like 40 yards off the Lakeshore Drive path. She was obviously an expert at what she was doing, so it just must be agonizing to not know.
On the other hand, I watched some of the funeral on Channel 11 head-to-head, and they streamed it. And it was given how shocking it was that she had died, it was a very joyous event. And also some of the interviews they did on Channel 11 with people who knew and worked with her, they were smiling through the whole thing. They loved her and they wanted to honor her. And yeah, it was.
I usually don't like the expression "they died, you know, doing what they loved," or that would be the way they want to go, because nobody wants to go. But boy, she did go out the way she, you know, loved her life. I mean, she was doing the thing that she loved the most, evidently. Because when I'd say, when are you going to work on another report? When are we going to see you on TV again? She said, yeah, I'm riding my bike right now. That
it
was her thing.
Reminded me of that closing, the column that Charles Krauthammer wrote.
Oh,
he's now, you know, only has a few more probably weeks to live.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm going out knowing that I lived the life I intended. And I think that probably applies to her, too.
I was reading a story today about the ads that J.B. Pritzker and Bruce Rauner are running against each other. Do you have sort of any insight for how the two campaigns are going and battling it out? Rauner has the J.B. plumbing service making fun of his homes and stuff like that.
I feel like J.B. has such a head start. There's a lot of material for him to go after Rauner. And there's just not as much material right now for Rauner to go after JB. So we're going to hear about his homes and you know, how he removed the toilets and, like, got a property tax break. But I don't feel like that has really rattled him.
Well, you're also going to hear the recordings of Blagojevich and Pritzker talking.
I was just going to bring that up. I think that's telling. That's all they got right now. But, boy, those they still sound bad. We've explained them a million times on this podcast and on the radio, the context to them. JB is not a bad guy. But he sounds bad on those tapes.
He's just sucking up to Rod, and
he wanted a job to be treasurer of the state of Illinois, and he was just humoring Blagojevich because that's what you had to do.
So either of you going to vote for Rauner because of those tapes?
No. Well, I don't know who I'm going to vote for, but I'm sure not going to let those tapes influence me, which may be a kind of reverse influence. I'm going to now be more likely to vote for JB just so I don't want to fall trap to what Rauner's trying to do.
That's his long game. You know, the toilet thing is, it's a good ad. I mean, it's a good ad. It's a good approach. I just don't know if there's enough. As Kristen says, there's not really that much on Pritzker's record. I don't know how successful the effort's going to be to tie him to Madigan, but you're going to see a lot of that. You know, people really don't like Mike Madigan in this state.
I'm going to ask you guys for your recommendations now. Tell me something that you are eating, drinking, reading, watching, listening to that you think our listeners might also like.
I have another podcast that I've just started listening to, and this is really geeky. It is the Good Place podcast. You know the TV show, The Good Place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, they've got a podcast now about the show, and they have the producers and the actors and the casting director, and all these people come in and they talk about all the decisions they made during the show, and it is like, it's real fan geek podcast, but I'm really enjoying it.
How about you?
So I'm reading Under the Scarlet Sky, really excellent story about a World War II hero from Italy. And then my drink recommendation, which I haven't tried yet, but somebody said you have to, your summer drink has to be, well, in addition to my, you know, tequila and fresco.
Your margarita.
My margarita. Pink lemonade and prosecco, which
Ooh,
I think sounds
yes.
kind of, I don't know, sweet.
Sounds
too
a little
sweet for
foo-foo,
me, but,
doesn't it?
I don't know. I heard it's delicious. So someone try it and report back.
I'll have to report back to you on the drink that I'm going to try and concoct this weekend. And that's, I actually made my raspberry simple syrup that I mix with gin, lime juice, top it with prosecco.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
There's a lot going on there. And I recall having had it once before and liked it. Now I've got to get the proportions and ingredients just right. I'm looking forward to the journey, and I will report back to you on how that goes. And my other recommendation is go to WGNradio.com, and there you will be able to buy tickets for our conversation with Thomas Jefferson. The third president and I do a live stage show once or twice a year. He comes on stage, we ask him questions. But if you ever wanted to ask a founding father something, here is your opportunity to do so. We sell these shows out, and if ever it would be good to sit back and talk to Thomas Jefferson and ask him what does he think about how we're doing today, or get some wisdom from him. In fact, the title of this year's show, this show in August, is Thanks, Thomas Jefferson, We Needed That. And you can get tickets by going to WGNradio.com. The show will be Saturday, August 18th at 10 a.m. at the College of DuPage. Kristen, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Zorn, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune and editorial writer, is Kristen. Scott Standis couldn't join us today, nor could Steve Bertrand. You'll hear our friends Justin Kaufman and Patty Vasquez once in a while, too. I'm John Williams. The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garrison. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.